Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Alex Ritson, and in the early hours of Monday, the 23rd of March, these are our main stories. Germany bans gatherings of more than two people in the hope of slowing the spread of the coronavirus. Spain reports its worst daily death toll from the virus since the outbreak began. The mayor of New York warns the city will soon face shortages of hospital supplies due to COVID-19. Also in this podcast, conservationists say endangered mountain gorillas in Africa could be at risk from the pandemic. And amid a worldwide suspension of services,
via headset, I'm attending a virtual reality church.
Religious leaders find alternative ways to reach their followers. It's a grim milestone. The number of coronavirus cases around the world has now passed 300,000. On Sunday, Germany came up with what are perhaps the most restrictive rules yet to counter the spread of the disease. Authorities there have announced a ban on gatherings of more than two people. Our correspondent in Berlin is Damien McGuinness.
Well, these are quite drastic new rules, and Angela Merkel said this is important to give hospitals time to prepare to limit social contact as much as possible. So the new rules are dramatic. Essentially, Angela Merkel said that in public, it's going to be compulsory to stand at least 1.5 metres, better 2 metres apart from other people. You're allowed to go out in public on your own or with one other person not in the same household or with people in the same household. You can go to work, you can go to the doctor, you can go out to individually practice sport and get some fresh air. Most other activities outside are banned, as are groups of people gathering together also inside. Angela Merkel said this was important because people in the health service were working incredibly hard. People in delivery services and in supply services were also working very hard. So it was very important for the whole population to support them. She thanked Germans for so far mostly really sticking to the guidelines. But these new rules have become now essential, says the government, in order to make it clear to people what's allowed, what's not allowed. This will last for 2 weeks. And at that point, the government will look again to see what sort of impact these rules have had on the spread of the virus.
Damien McGuinness in Berlin. Angela Merkel later announced she was placing herself in quarantine after being treated by a doctor who has since tested positive for the virus. Half of the confirmed cases worldwide are now in Europe. Germany is doing better than most. Spain on Sunday revealed its worst daily infection figure yet. As a result, the Prime Minister is now extending the existing state of emergency and is taking further steps to battle the disease. Our correspondent Damian Grammaticus is there.
I'm standing on one of the biggest avenues through Madrid and it's silent. There's just the odd vehicle and motorbike that comes past. You can hear the birds and in front of me is the Grand Hotel Colón. This is the first hotel that's been requisitioned by the government here to be used as an overflow treatment centre as the hospitals are getting saturated. It's a multi-storey blue glass building. We've seen doctors behind the glass doors in there treating patients. They say the situation inside is okay, but the numbers here, despite the shutdown that has brought the whole of Spain to a standstill, continue to rise. So another 3,600 infections and another 390 deaths. Although Spain has practically come to a standstill, it is struggling to stop the rise in cases. And the Prime Minister has said that the country faces, he says, difficult days in the coming couple of weeks because it may take many more days yet to bring the situation under control.
Damian Grammaticus in Spain. Meanwhile, there's been a slight positive development in Italy, the European country most affected by the outbreak. For the first time, there's been a small decrease in the number of new infections. They were up just 9%. Another 651 people died in the last 24 hours, a total lower than that announced on Saturday. In another development, a group of more than 50 Cuban doctors and nurses are travelling to the northern region of Lombardy to support doctors there fighting the coronavirus. They're part of an award-winning medical unit specialised in dealing with disaster zones and epidemics. One of them, Graciliano Diaz, was asked if he was afraid.
We're all afraid, but there is revolutionary work to do. Fear can be controlled and put to one side. Whoever says that he isn't afraid is a superhero, and we are not superheroes. We are revolutionary doctors.
Graciliano Diaz. So, what's the European Union doing? Danny Eberhardt is our Europe regional editor.
Well, it's a question that a lot of people have been asking. Now, there are big structural elements to the European Union's position. So, for example, things like being flexible on national budgets, allowing governments to spend on their health services and go over agreed limits. And also the European Central Bank, for example, is freeing up funds. So these are big structural things. There's also lots of talk of solidarity. And the European Commission is acting has a very important coordinating role, receiving requests from not just Italy, but other member states when they've got shortages. But some people have been asking, where's the practical support on the ground? I've been speaking to a European Commission spokesman, Balázs Ujhary, and he has said basically, of course, the European Union doesn't have a stock of doctors in Brussels waiting to go to any emergency. It's reliant on national member states to provide support. And he said that basically all nations are struggling at the moment to make sure their own national stocks of things like protective equipment, masks, gloves, things like that, are up to the levels needed. And he said that there's a problem in this regard in terms of global supply.
Obviously, the situation is extremely difficult, and it's particularly challenging for any member state at this point in time to provide crucially needed material to other fellow member states. Now, this is why the European Union, the European Commission, has decided to go a step further and purchase its own reserve of medical equipment. These will be owned by the European Union. They will be stored in a member state, which is yet to be defined. However, the decision over the distribution will be made by the European Commission, and we expect this to happen in the coming weeks.
So that's what the European Union, the European Commission is doing. But while it's being criticised for inaction, there have been other countries which have been helping Europe.
This is one of the problems. What you're not seeing is planes with the European Union flag arriving in Italy with stocks of medical masks, for example, whereas China, for example, has sent medical equipment. It sent doctors that are already helping out in the badly affected areas of northern Italy. Today, 50 Cuban doctors and nurses arrived in Italy. They were applauded at the airport when on arrival. And Russia says it has 9 planes with virologists, doctors, disinfectant vehicles and other medical equipment ready to go. So there is a problem of optics on this. It's of course, not quite as simple as that. The European Union provided 56 tons of aid and medical supplies to China in January to help it cope with the outbreak there. And I think perhaps what they didn't expect was that the situation would get so bad in Europe itself.
Danny Eberhardt. As the coronavirus infects more people around the world, there's a warning that Africa's endangered mountain gorillas could be put at risk. There are about 1,000 of the apes in protected areas of Congo, Uganda and Rwanda. Many of these protected habitats are being closed to visitors to protect the animals. There are always strict measures in place to prevent infection from human visitors. Joe Loncrane is a wildlife photographer who's just returned to the UK after photographing apes in Uganda.
Where I've just been in Uganda filming chimpanzees, we had very strict protocols in place, infection control protocols that tourists don't on the whole have to go through when they're filming when they're visiting in other places. But where we were filming, the research organizations and the Ugandan government have a policy that whenever you're with anywhere near the chimpanzees, you can't get closer than 7 meters to a chimpanzee. We had to use hand sanitizer every 30 minutes, regardless of what we were doing. We had to use hand sanitizer every time we touched our face or adjusted our mask. We had to have clothes that were in our camp. We would have one set of clothes that we wore in camp, but we had a separate clothes for the field that we would keep in a separate room. You had to go into that room with a set of transition clothes, almost like an airlock, to put those clothes on. So nothing that was going in the forest was being would be contaminated. Boots were bleached. Equipment had to be sterilized before it was taken into the field. But they've been doing that in many places all over Africa where chimpanzees are studied.
Joe, you're taking these precautions. You work for a professional company, but presumably tourists don't.
So, you know, we've got tourists going to Uganda and Rwanda to look at gorillas and chimpanzees, and probably in Borneo and Sumatra to look at orangutans. And in none of those places do tourists usually get asked to take the same precautions. So there is a real risk that tourists will spread disease to some of these populations.
That's wildlife photographer Joe Loncrane. Our Africa regional editor Mary Harper told me more about how much the region relies on wildlife tourism.
It's absolutely essential that they protect these animals, especially if you think about Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo, which have both been completely destroyed by a genocide in Rwanda, ongoing war in the DRC, and this is one crucial source of foreign exchange for them. Rwanda, for example, charges $1,000 for a permit to go and see mountain gorillas, so it rakes in a lot of money through this tourism. So it's very important that they protect them. And Rwanda and the DRC have taken the extraordinary measure of actually closing their parks temporarily. Rwanda, they've closed three and stopped research activities. In the DRC, they've closed the very famous Virunga Park. Uganda, though, has got a slightly different approach. It says because the tourist numbers have dropped off so dramatically, there's no point closing the parks because nobody's going to visit these precious animals anyway.
So park closures, but apart from that, is there anything that the authorities can do?
It's very difficult. I mean, they're also very worried that if now that they've closed the parks and they won't be having park rangers and the tours going on there, that poachers who really have wreaked havoc in these parks are going to be on the rise again. So it really is a very challenging situation for these countries, not just because of the animals, but also their own populations that are under threat from coronavirus.
Mary Harper. An Israeli woman diagnosed with coronavirus has been documenting her time in medical isolation to nearly 30,000 followers online. Danielle Shami tested positive after a trip to Spain and is among more than 400 confirmed cases in Israel. She was numbered patient 74 by Israel's Ministry of Health, which has been publishing patients' travel details to alert people they may have come into contact with. Tom Bateman has been listening to her story.
Okay, so I'm Danielle, and here I'm known as patient number 74, or like corona casualty number 74.
When you started to get symptoms, just run me through that, what you started to feel.
Okay, so you know when you start getting cough, so you feel something in your throat? This is like the first symptom that started, and then like you get a cough, but it wasn't like that bad, so I didn't know exactly it was this. It was only like getting worse at night. So I gave it like a few days. And after a few days, I got a little bit of high fever. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should call and get tested. But then I tested positive. Once they published my route in Tel Aviv, that's when the whole thing started. Because it was like, oh, who's this hipster lesbian like running around town, taking down all the other lesbians? Like all the lesbians have to be in quarantine now.
Did you feel frightened or concerned about yourself?
No. I mean, I was pretty confident and like I wasn't like scared of it because of my symptoms, because they were pretty light.
When you took the test, what was that like?
It was super weird. I felt like it was like a scene from E.T. or something. You feel like an alien. Everything is out in the open. They get dressed like outside your house, or they come with a spacesuit. The test was like fine because I wanted to know if I have it or not. But once you get the results, you have to explain people and you don't know how people will react. And then you have to be taken away. And so basically I was here. I got here. I was traumatized. I was like having a nervous breakdown.
So they came and you said they took you away into the unit you're in now, this isolation place. So what happened?
I was being put in like a room and then a screen turns up, lights up, and then the doctors speak to you through the screen. And it's like super weird. And also the way here, you go through like this tunnel and like more doctors in like suits. And then they speak to you in the screens and they tell you like, okay, so basically there's no treatment and there's no like medicine. So it's just monitoring you. they're going to check your fever every once in a while, your blood pressure and blah, blah, blah. So I do it. And then I have to tell them the results.
I mean, how do you feel now?
Well, physically, I feel great. Mentally, it's kind of hard. So I'm trying to lift myself every time. Oh, I'm still here.
Are there other coronavirus patients in there then?
Yeah, we're all together, sleeping in the same rooms, like all day together. When I came here, we were 10, and that was last Wednesday. And now we're like almost 30.
And take me through the Instagram stuff. I mean, how much following has been added since you've been posting on?
I started with 1,600. It was really crazy because when it started, I was still like in a state of shock and panic. It's like looking at the situation through a screen, so it helps me like detach from the situation. So it helped me like cope with it. My mind was screaming, but I was still posting.
Tom Bateman speaking to the Israeli social media influencer Danielle Shami. Still to come, Croatia's capital Zagreb is rocked by two successive earthquakes, but the authorities urge people to keep their distance amid fears about the coronavirus.
Stay away from each other. I know that now being together is a sign of solidarity, but keep away from each other because you are threatening your health and the health of your family members.
Like Europe, the United States is seeing a surge of COVID-19 cases. The city of New York is particularly hard hit, where nearly 8,000 people have coronavirus. That's nearly a third of all cases in the country. Hospitals and healthcare facilities are overwhelmed. And now the city's mayor, Bill de Blasio, has warned that they are 10 days away from seeing widespread shortages of supplies. Speaking to Chuck Todd on the NBC programme Meet the Press, Mr. de Blasio said the president needed to act.
The truth is, and New Yorkers and all Americans deserve the blunt truth, it's only getting worse. And in fact, April and May are going to be a lot worse. The President of the United States is from New York City, and he will not lift a finger to help his hometown. And I don't get it. I don't get it. Right now, I have asked repeatedly for the military to be mobilized, for the Defense Production Act to be used to its fullest, to get us things like ventilators so people who can live who would die otherwise. Chuck, I can't be blunt enough. If the president doesn't act, people will die who could have lived otherwise.
Let's get a bit more detail on the situation in New York from a leading expert in infectious diseases. Dr. Syra Madad is a special pathogens expert at New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation. James Menendez asked how worried she is about the number of cases being reported.
Well, it is obviously very worrying, given that the number of cases are continuing to rise, which is expected as diagnostic capabilities are increasing across the state. But in addition to that, it's concerning because there's a large population here in New York City, in New York State. And what we know is that this increase is going to continue before the foreseeable future. And this is why we want to make sure people understand the tactics they can use to reduce the number of new chains of infection and keeping themselves and their loved one and the community safe.
And just on the rate of infection at the moment, is it in line with what you expected?
That's right. This is something that we've expected, given just what's been happening around the globe with coronavirus disease. New York State, New York City is no exception. This, even if you're young, whether you're healthy, whether also you're in the high risk or in the older population, no one is invincible. Everybody is obviously at risk of contracting coronavirus disease. While the large majority will have mild signs and symptoms, and we are trying to protect the high risk population, we want to also make sure that 80% that we talk about need to make sure that they're taking this seriously, because just because they may have a mild form of the actual disease, we are seeing more cases of the younger population getting infected and requiring more intensive measures, if you will. So again, no one is invincible.
And what is the biggest challenge for the health system in the city and the state at the moment, would you say?
It's no surprise, and I think not just obviously in New York City or New York State, but across the nation, the name of the game right now is supplies and healthcare worker availability. We know that the cases are continuing to ramp up. We're just really at the very early end of this epidemic across the nation. This is only going to increase, and so we would need to make sure that there are first more able bodies, more healthcare workers, essentially because we need all hands on deck. And on top of that, we need to make sure that there are adequate supplies. So this includes not just personal protective equipment, but ventilators and other equipment and supplies. And so those are the two things across the nation that needs to be ramped up, and even across the globe.
And do you think you can get those supplies in time? I mean, things are moving very fast, aren't they?
They are moving very fast. And, you know, a number of institutions, facilities across the nation only have days of supplies on hand. And so there needs to be an urgency to ramp up these critical equipment and supplies that is needed to save lives. I think everyone has a great conservation strategy in place to reuse or extend the use of a number of these critical assets, but we need to make sure that we're getting more and in a timely fashion.
Are people observing the restrictions that are in place? And can you see any evidence that they are having an effect and buying some time?
It's way too early to tell in terms of if they're having an effect. Obviously, this is something that we will continue to see. You know, I think you make a good point because you may not be able to see if it's having an effect right away. Because if we're all doing our job, if we're all actually implementing the measures and abiding by it, then you won't see perhaps a sharp rise in the number of cases. And then people will tend to think, well, maybe this was for nothing or it just didn't work. And that's actually what we want to see is obviously not a sharp rise in cases. And so it's just one of those things where we're going to have to just continue to play it out and see how things progress. But at the same time, we want to also make sure folks understand what they can do in this particular pandemic situation, because everybody plays a role.
It is one of the, I guess, the characteristics of this sort of outbreak, this sort of pandemic, that actually public policy in terms of actions, restrictions, that sort of thing, I mean, it can't follow the numbers, can it? It has to anticipate it, which is difficult in itself for making the policy, but also difficult for people to understand, as you hinted at.
That's right. I mean, a lot of these decisions early on obviously had to be made without any evidence or data of widespread transmission. And that's obviously because diagnostic capabilities was not ramped up. But even though it is continuing to be ramped up, we know that there's only the cases that we're seeing across the nation is just really a subset of the actual cases that are probably already in the community. And so this is why we need to make sure that we're implementing a number of these measures right away. There's no luxury of time. We can't wait on time, another week, another day to think, okay, well, maybe tomorrow I should implement this. The time to do all of this is now.
Just one final thought. I mean, the mayor talked about 40 to 80% of people eventually contracting it. I mean, is that a figure you recognize?
It is, because 100% of the population is vulnerable. This is a disease that no one has seen before, and so everybody is vulnerable to it. And so it just goes to show how well we can socially distance ourselves to make sure that we are protected from getting infected from coronavirus disease. So I think certainly it is a very plausible number.
James Menendez speaking to Dr. Saira Madad. In Colombia, 23 people have died in a riot in the main prison in Bogotá. Inmates at La Modelo were protesting against poor services during the coronavirus pandemic. Candace Peart reports.
Videos on social media showed inmates in La Modelo prison out in the yard burning mattresses in protest against conditions. Family members outside the gate said they'd heard reports of bodies and of shots being fired after the security forces had arrived. Around 80 people were said to have been injured. In other jails across the country, prisoners complained about the postponement of visits and demanded to be released because of the pandemic. There were also reports of attempted escapes. Colombia's Justice Ministry says it has begun investigating the violence.
Candace Peart with that report. The authorities in Croatia say they're expecting to provide temporary accommodation for 1,000 people displaced by two earthquakes which struck the Zagreb area in quick succession on Sunday morning. The Interior Minister, Davor Božinović, urged people to resist the temptation to try to be together because of the threat of coronavirus.
Please, all of you who are outside, primarily Zagreb citizens, because Zagreb is the epicenter of the earthquake, stay away from each other. I know that now being together is a sign of solidarity, but keep away from each other, because you are threatening your health and the health of your family members.
Zagreb's mayor echoed what the interior minister said and asked people to return home rather than risk spreading the virus. Guy Delaunay reports.
Very few people were on the streets when the earthquake struck, just before 6:30 in the morning local time, but falling masonry from Zagreb's historic buildings crushed parked cars and blocked roads. The country's parliament and the city's cathedral were among scores of structures which were damaged. Hospitals were also affected, forcing patients and staff outside, some cradling newborn babies in their arms. Prime Minister Andrej Plenković said it was Croatia's strongest earthquake for 140 years.
Guy Delaunay. Unlike many other countries which are in lockdown or under severe restrictions, Tajikistan in Central Asia is holding mass celebrations to mark the spring holiday. Neighbouring countries have registered numerous cases of infections and introduced measures to contain the virus. But the Tajik authorities say the country is still virus-free. Here's Rehan Dimitri.
The largest gathering is being held in the northern city of Khujand, where thousands of university students and school children are taking part in a mass performance to mark the spring equinox. Tajikistan's authoritarian president Emomali Rahmon is attending. He has refused to cancel public events despite recommendations from the World Health Organization. The Tajik health authorities maintain that there is no coronavirus in the country, but hundreds of Tajik citizens returning from abroad have been placed in quarantine.
Rehan Dimitri. Religious services have been cancelled around the world to help stem the spread of coronavirus. But thanks to digital technology, many religious leaders are coming up with creative ways to reach their followers. The BBC's Sophia Smith-Gaylor has been investigating the subject in a series of reports for the Heart and Soul programme. This week she attended an online Christian service.
It's a Sunday evening and I'm about to join a church service. However, I'm in a flat in London and the other people you can hear are all over the world. So via headset, I'm attending a virtual reality church. There's a right crowd of people here. Hello! Okay, I am now going in to VR church. Hello! I'm using an Oculus Quest. That's Pastor DJ Soto. He's leading tonight's service, and physically, he's in Virginia in the USA. But I'm joining him on AltSpace, which is one of many virtual reality platforms. So what you can hear is partly what's happening in the VR church, recorded via my headset, and partly a recording from where I physically am. It's a very unique experience.
The theme that keeps going over and over and over again that God wants to let us know is that He does.
Because this is a lyric video, I imagine everyone is singing along and reading the words, but my microphone is muted and so is everybody else's, so we could very much all be singing right now, but you have no idea. Oh, everyone's doing heart emojis. I need to do one.
To our everyday life, to our important moments, and to every other situation. Thank you. Amen. We lift
our hands. Do you still encourage people to have some kind of physical church experience? Or is a diet of virtual and physical the future?
I think ultimately people need to do what's best for them. You know, some people can't go to church on a Sunday. What do you individually need to do to help grow your spiritual life? And whatever that is, you need to do it.
Pastor DJ Soto, ending that report by Sophia Smith-Gaylor. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Alex Ritson. Until next time, goodbye.